Okay, well, somebody screwed up the music, so you're on.
We're on?
You're on.
Hello.
Welcome to Community Radio.
Hey, that's all good. I don't mind at all. Yeah, boys and girls, moms and dads, ships at sea, ships on the rock, ships on a lake. Hey, we're all here. And it's Fish and Frank's again. And Fish and Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and our producer, RJ, over there behind the desk doing all the important stuff. And, yeah, it all works. So, anyway, been an amazingly nasty last weekend, cold, windy, kind of awful, and now we've got beautiful weather. It's like Florida again. I'm coming up here. I'm, like, taking off shirts, taking off jackets, going, man, this is wonderful. It's hot. Love it. All right, so getting into, do the fish love it? And that would be kind of where we bring Robert in. Do the fish love the cold, or do they love the bright sunshine, or do they hate everything? Is it just, does the world completely go to heck with the everything? I mean, everything's bad. It's Armageddon.
Yeah, pretty much. No. Most of your fish don't like the cold weather, but a handful of them really do enjoy it. But like we
now, I'm going to, okay, handful of them do enjoy it. Now, I would have thought trout would have.
Spotted sea trout.
The speckled trout. Now, you're saying they really enjoy it. I'm sorry, they left the flats. They went back to the canals. They're up in some of the bays. They're looking for fish that should love this cold water actually abandoned ship. I mean, they're, you know, exit stage left. So how do you support that theory?
Did they abandon the flats because it was cold, or did they abandon it because there was no food around?
Conundrum.
Oh. So now he's going to get smart on me. All right, go ahead.
You were
use
the
big
the
brain. All right. So
you know, that's my only theory on it, because normally they are on the flats, but this year we're hearing of less pinfish out on the flats, even the little babies. You know, the glass minnows didn't show up into the harbor the way they normally
That's
do.
That's the scary part. You know, I mean, so people don't realize
like
the glass minnows are the barometer of everything.
They're our canary.
Yeah, because when you have lots of glass minnows, we got tons of fish. When you have no glass minnows, we have no fish in the middle of the harbor.
Yep.
And that's been the scenario this fall, and I don't understand it. Because now we're hearing about pods out in the Gulf and the mackerel and everything else in the Gulf. But not in the harbor this year. I wonder what changed.
I don't know. I mean, this year's been, it hasn't been horrible, but depending on who you talk to, it is. But overall, general consensus is fishing is not bad.
Well, speaking of horrible, you abandoned me yesterday, took off, went fishing, you know, didn't even, you know, invite anybody, you know, just him and his buddies take off. You know how that goes, boys and girls. You know, when you're sitting there and, okay, I'm just a little stressed, everything's going good. What does your buddy do? Haul butt on you. Where'd you go?
Went over to the other coast to Stewart.
You feeling guilty yet?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. It's a good thing.
See, the funny part I knew there was a 98% chance that you would say no anyway because of your equilibrium stuff, and it was going to be rough season. I was going to be in the fetal position all day figuring, and then you not being exactly...
I don't know. The chance to watch you chum all day was, you know, pretty alluring.
Well, there you go. That's true.
You know, so...
Would have made for some good
photographs. So where'd you go?
Went over to Stewart to go fish for sailfish. The first time I've ever done it, and the crappiest part about doing sailfish is that the best ultimate peak times to do it is right as a front is hitting or right after the front hits when it's the worst weather possible. And it was pretty darn close to that yesterday.
So how big were the waves?
5 to 7s with an occasional oh crap.
So 5 to 7s and oh my God. Okay. How big a boat were you in?
35-foot CV, which is like it's a catamaran hull.
Okay, so...
It's a center console. This is a nice, big, wide, comfortable boat, but...
Who was the captain? Who'd you go out with?
Pat Daymaker Charters.
Okay, Daymaker Charters.
Yeah.
So...
And it was pretty impressive. He did, you know, got to learn a lot and riding the waves and trolling, very slow trolling with... Dead ballyhoo, And then later on in the day, we did some kite fishing and then just some flat-out free lining of live baits.
Can you tell how excited he is? I mean, he goes to the East Coast. Did you actually catch a fish?
I did.
I mean, I'm thinking, okay, he's going to get around and say, I caught a fish. Or you know, and the other thing I want to know, is there pictures? Is there proof of this?
Well, there are some pictures, but they're not great pictures.
Okay, so what... You went out fishing for sailfish. Was it successful?
Absolutely. We did 6 sails for 12 hookups, you know, which I think is pretty darn impressive.
So you got 6 sailfish. How many did you personally catch?
3.
3. All right.
I landed all 3 of mine. I won't say the other person broke his off.
So that's where the 12 comes in?
Yes. We had 12 total hookups, so 6 other fish were hooked up.
And broke off.
So I got to personally fight 3 of them and landed all 3 of them without any failures in between.
So you gave him 9 or, well, there was 3 of you guys.
Only 2.
That only 2 fishing?
The other 2 just did.
So you let him have 9 fish to break off?
Yeah.
You're generous. Overly generous. See, that's why you didn't come with me.
Well,
that's why you didn't take me. Cause
well,
I,
here, know. Here's the thing. Because you were witness to this going back 18 years ago. All I ever wanted to do was catch a tarpon.
Right.
And Robert, he only has always dreamed about catching a sailfish and never been able to do it. So that was kind of the reason for setting up this trip. I wanted to see him catch his first something.
Gotcha. Because it was on Robert's boat that you caught your first tarpon.
Yep. You know, and you were witness to that, which was absolutely amazing and still my best, fondest memory ever. And to watch him do it, all I wanted to do was see him catch some sailfish. If I caught one, I was going to be content, but as long as he caught and landed one and got the
Did he ever get around to actually landing one?
Yeah. Yeah, he ended up landing 3.
Okay. So you were out there trolling for him with Ballyhoo. How fast are they trolling?
Real slow, like 2, maybe 3 miles an hour. I mean, okay. It might have been a little faster with the waves. It was hard to tell, but it seemed like a very slow troll.
One question I would have, because, you know, running a boat, are you trolling into the waves or...
He did both.
Against the waves and, yeah. And with the waves?
Yeah, because he would... If we got a hit, I guess when a front hits, they really ball up tight in a small area. So if you hook one sailfish, there's a good chance that there's dozens more in that immediate vicinity. So if we would get a hit, he would circle back around and then troll that way and then come back through the same area and troll back through. And it proved true at the last part of the day when we were doing the kites and the drift and the free lining of baits, because it was nonstop action pretty quick.
So your free lining baits, what kind of baits were you free lining?
Goggle eyes.
All right. Goggle eyes. And you said you were doing kite fishing. Now... Literally, boys and girls, what you do when you're kite fishing is you send a kite up and you have a release clip on it so that the line goes to the kite down into the water and you get it out away from the boat so it's not near the commotion of the boat. And the bait goes down in the water from the kite. And then when the fish hits, he pulls it out of the kite and you bring the fish in.
Yeah. And you're playing with the kite all the time and the line on your fishing pole. To try to keep that bait just on the surface, kind of dancing around. You don't want him to come hanging out of the water so he doesn't die, but you also don't want him deep, deep under the water.
So basically you have a line on the kite and then the line on the fishing pole. Were you actually working both lines, or was the mate on the boat working the kite and you working the line, or what was going on?
Robert and the captain were doing that. They both stood there because I can't see it far enough away to see if the bait was out of the water.
Gotcha.
So they just sat there, and because they had 2 kites out, one off the bow and one off the stern. So one was standing there playing with 2 rods and the kite line. The other guy was up in the front playing with 2 rods and the kite line.
Now, the freeline baits, is it the same way we freeline here? You just toss them out, let them swim?
Just toss them out and let them swim.
So which was more effective, the kite fishing or just tossing them out and letting them swim?
The freelining, the tossing them out and letting them swim.
All right. What would you say the hit ratio was?
Probably 4-2.
Okay.
2 off the kite and 4 off the free line. And they were feeding really weird because both the captain and Gary, the other gentleman on the boat, they would see the rod bounce a little bit, and they would feed some line out, and just as they would get ready to tighten up on the drag, the fish would drop the bait again. Because I guess you have to, you'll see them hit the bait, and then everyone's a little different, they say, but they usually like to do at least a 6 count of free spool, let the fish swim away with it, and then slowly go up into the strike position with the lever drag, and then just barely lift the rod up.
So circle hook or?
Circle hook.
Yeah, well, with circle hook, that kind of makes sense, because they're literally trying to, excuse me, I don't know where that came from. All right, so what they're trying to do is let the fish actually swallow the bait a bit, and then using the benefits of an inline circle hook, by slowly putting the pressure, you're literally pulling that hook back out of its throat, coming around to let it lodge on the side of their mouth.
Yep.
So it's actually, it makes a little bit of sense. I mean, it's a little risky and not something you could do with a J hook or an offset circle, because both those would snag in the fish down deep.
Yeah.
And now you said pictures were tough because the guys were really wanting to get fish back in the water, didn't want to take time for pictures. And these were what? How big? How long would you say these fish were?
They probably average from the tip of the nose to the fork of the tail, which the bill's fairly long. I would say 4 foot.
Okay, so nice sailfish.
Yeah, 30 to 40 pounds.
We do get that around here every once in a while. What is it, in the springtime, I guess, we get?
Yeah, March and April is real popular.
March and April, we're going to be able to do that right out here. I've heard them off of Novak, Tremblay, most of the reefs here, including the Palm Island Ferry. We've heard of guys catching these sailfish over here.
Absolutely.
Is the fishing the same way?
Yeah, I mean, you could probably do it the same way. The biggest thing here is that there's not the numbers the way it is over there, so you might be trolling or drifting all day for maybe one fish.
So if it was me, I think that what I would do is try and get a live thread fin, greenback, sardine, something like that. Put it out about, 4 feet under a bobber and just toss that bait out, let it get away from the boat, put it in the rod holder while you were grouper fishing, snapper fishing, doing whatever. Just having that bait out on a free line, but out under a float. Because you can't freeline it, because eventually it's going to end up with everything else. At least if you got a float on it, you can tell where it is.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
To me, that would be the ideal thing. I'm thinking, I like the bright color floats because I can see where they are. But I'm not sure it'd be conducive to good, getting hits. So maybe paint the bottom of the float black and leave the bright color on top so you could find it.
Yeah, that might be a good idea.
And
I like that idea a lot.
To me, that's going to seem like it's going to be your best bet, because that having that float up there 4 feet above a sailfish who hunts not only by sound but a lot by sight, I think having the bottom of the bobber black and making it look like something nondescript in the water, keeping the bright top half of the float, bright color. And that's as simple as a black magic marker, boys and girls. This isn't like it takes a lot to, I'm going to go out and buy a black and, bright colored bobber. A magic marker would cure it.
Oh, yeah. That'd be the easiest way.
Very simple way to do it is just, take a marker and make the bottom of your float black. And which is not exactly a horrible idea on the flats either. We've had that work quite often where just guys do the whole float, but then I can't see them, so I only do half. Was there any other fish you guys caught? Any bycatch that you did over there?
I think 4 dolphin. Mahi, mahi, dorado, whatever you want to call them. Florida calls them dolphin. Everyone else has a different name. Not super big, 22 to 26 inches long. So it wasn't too bad at all. It was really good. And then one houndfish.
A houndfish.
Which is like a needlefish.
Okay.
It was about 2 foot long.
Isn't it kind of amazing? He catches these mahi-mahi, and you'd think, oh, my God, I got mahi-mahi, or sailfish. But you there? All right, well, we're going to call you back on the other line so we can hear you on the air, okay? We'll call you in just a second. All right, bye. go ahead, finish your thought.
I get excited. I mean, I I don't know. I mean, it was totally an awesome thing to have fulfilled. I mean, it wasn't the highest fish on my bucket list of stuff, but to do something totally unique and different that is, I mean, a lot of people have done it, and I've read about it in theory, so to actually go there and physically see both the slow trolling, the kite fishing, which I've done kite fishing here for tarpon and sharks, but to see the way he was doing multiple rigs off of one kite was pretty neat.
I mean, now, that's something I've never done. I've only used one rig per kite. I've never used multiple rigs on a kite. I've never been that brave.
Right.
We've been talking about the fishing over on the east coast of Florida, and Robert's so excited he was able to go over there. I mean, you can feel the intensity coming right through the microphone.
Right.
And that's Captain Carl on the line, I think. Carl, you there?
Hey, hold on.
All right, we're Captain Carl Buttigieg. This is KB Backcountry Charters. We've been talking about the east coast sailfish, a little bit of mahi, but we're going to bring it back into the Charlotte County area, Sarasota County. What's going on out in the world? Where are you, Carl?
Oh, we got a fish on. Oh, there's a snook. We're actually up here in the river right now.
It sounds like it's not too bad. What are you using for bait up there?
You're going to get that fish, or is he going to take you? Oh, where is he going? we're throwing shrimp on a jig head on a Rockport Rattler.
And... Go ahead, Carl. Help him with it. We can wait. We got.
No, it's fine. He's getting his butt whooped over here.
So, how far upriver are you? Harbor Heights or up higher?
No, right now I'm actually at, right by the 75 bridge.
All right.
Fishing the sawgrass.
So, how's your snook doing? Where is it coming in?
I've got them in my hand right now. Yeah, it's a nice little fish. Probably about 24 inches. Shrimp on jig head.
So how you...
It's been a little slow up here today. It's been, you know, a couple snappers here, a couple snappers there. We just went to this other spot that I was trying to go to, and we didn't get there. There was somebody there, but we just watched them pull out two really nice redfish and a nice snook.
So, how's your trip been? Is this your first snook, or is it?
Yeah, it's the first snook that we've got so far.
So, any redfish you're seeing up there besides what the OPs are catching?
No, they beat us to the spot.
Okay.
You know the spot.
I'm sure I would, but. How far upriver did you go?
We actually went all the way up by towards the Truffles. And then we went a little bit north of there, too. Not very far.
Now, up. The Sansucci Trussell or the Fort Ogden?
The Sansucci Trussells.
Yeah, I've been fishing that far right corner of Sansucci to pretty good effect. But I get better numbers of snook over there, but more variety out towards the middle. I mean, you might get a snook or a redfish or snappers in the middle, where on the outside edges, it's pretty much just a snook, story.
Yeah, we've seen quite a few juvenile tarpon rolling up here today.
Really?
Yep, right at the mouth of the Shell Creek.
Well, I'll have to go check that out when I get off the air. That's right out in front of my house.
But, yeah, I mean, prior to today, I've been sitting out in Boca Grande. Boca Grande's doing very well right now.
Okay, well, what brought you up river?
The guys I'm on an educational thing with their boat, and they wanted to learn the river. They fish out there in Turtle One, Pine Island, and all that. They wanted to learn some stuff up in the river.
So, all right.
But the triple tail is going off right now. We got 16 triple tail yesterday. The trout bite's doing very well, and the redfish bite's doing very well. It seems like the bite's still doing better on artificial, though.
Okay. Getting into artificials, now, one of the things you've been experimenting with is the Strike King crawdads. Is that still holding up?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't caught no redfish on those crawdads the past couple of days, but the trout are still eating them like crazy. I'm just rigging them on a rock port and a jig head. and I'm reeling them very, very slow, just letting those two little arms sit there and spin.
That's awesome.
They're working very, very well. Lighter color plastics are working better right now than darker color.
All right, so basically, you and I were talking a while back, and I was telling you how I like to use those in place of the old curl twin tails. You get a curl tail grub, and they used to have two tails on them, and they're hard to get in any color except white, and they're the sizes, because they're not popular. So I was using those and selling those to people for twin tails, and it's working for you, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's working very, very well, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm surprised how well that is working right now.
So that's a Strike King Rage Tail Craw, or Rage Craw, or something like that.
Yeah, I'm using the Houdini color in those.
All right. Well, that's pretty awesome.
And then, like, I'm using, like, all your Nuclear Chicken and your lighter colors on the Gulps and Z-Man baits.
All right. Nuclear Chicken is a bright green, pink color, and you're using that in the shrimp pattern?
Yes, the shrimp pattern is working great right now.
Now, is that better on the redfish than the crawdad?
Yes. The past few days, it seems like that's working better than the crawdad the past few days. But last week, the crawdad was working amazing. That coffee scented one that you swear by.
Yeah, I
listened to you and I tried it and it was working.
You know, well, you know me, Carl, what do I walk around with all day? It's coffee with cream sugar. So,
yeah.
I figure if I like it that much, RJ, our producer, sitting over here, he's got coffee, cream sugar. I said, if we like it that much, why wouldn't the fish? And it seems to work. That Strike King coffee scent is awesome. And now my boat doesn't stink like all these goofy fish smells. For years, my boat smelled like crawdads and menhaden and dead crab and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Now it smells like coffee with cream and sugar. Getting into the Z-Man, now, are you using a shrimp pattern or jerkbait? What are you doing in the Z-Man?
I'm using the shrimp pattern and also the jerkbait, the paddle tail version.
Gotcha.
Both of them are working very, very well. I mean, I kind of like that Z-Man a lot better just because they're tough. I mean, you could literally throw a Z-Man pretty much all day.
Well, I get that. Now, I'm sorry, but I was hearing, but it's hard for me to hear and understand things all at the same time. You know, English is a great, English is a good first language, but I speak bad English better than I speak English. So, did you say you were using the jerkbait paddle tails?
Yes. And the Z-Man.
Gotcha. Now, light colors working definitely better, the whites, gray type colors?
I think I'm using the Houdini tube still in the Z-Man pattern.
Okay. So that's kind of a gray and it's got dark and light both mixed in it.
Yeah, it's a lighter color.
All right. Anything that you can think of for as far as any advice up on the river? Is it real slow working the baits or is it moving them a little quick?
No, it's moving them real slow, just bouncing them off the bottom, very, very slow. Honestly, I'm a little surprised how slow the river's doing right now. I'm not sure if it's because of all that rain we just got.
Yeah.
It might have slowed the bite down up here because, like, we haven't even got into all the little rat reds that you usually do up here, and that's pretty odd.
Yeah, because they
fish the docks.
Kale was up there about a week ago and did real good. He was working those passes between the main channel and Shell Creek, and there was a bunch of little redfish there. That first island by Long Key and Bird Key, that channel in between, fishing that right-hand side.
There's probably 10 boats on that right here.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a tough place to get into. But
yeah.
Yeah, if that many boats, it's not going to... You're going to catch fish every once in a while, but it's not going to be great.
Yeah.
But when they all line up on that side...
I'd say 75 is doing pretty good.
Well, on the far side of that cut, not the right side where everybody fishes, but the left, if for the first 20 feet, you know where it turns to go down to the flat part of I-75, that first 15, 20 feet before you make the turn, still in the cut, that end 20 feet right there, it's a great redfish spot that nobody else fishes because it's fairly deep all along that edge, and then there's that sandbar caused by the current to the main channel, so it forms a nice pocket right there. So it's nobody fishes there but me. That I until now I just talked about it on the radio, but it's actually a pretty good spot. And when that other side loads up, I go over to that corner and I usually do real well.
Yeah, that's where we start. We started there this morning. We got a snapper there this morning.
Yeah, well, the redfish are there when the water's kind of touching the branches. If it's down 6-8 inches from the branches, it gets harder to find redfish there. But as soon as the water comes back up, they boil up into there.
Yeah, water won't be up probably till almost tonight when it's going to be that high.
All right.
It's very, very low right now. Like the bar going down between the 75, like between the bridges, is still out of water.
Ooh, yeah, that makes it tough. I get on that north end, and there's that manatee sign that sits way out by the sandbar. That's actually in a trough, a pocket. And if you can get up, staying just on the edge of that, casting it, you can do pretty good on that trough there, too. Questions for Captain Carl, Robert?
Yeah. What is your water temperature up there right now?
Hold on.
He would have to stick his finger in it to find out. His depth finder don't work.
He's on someone else's boat.
Hey, how do you see the water tank?
Waiting.
I don't know what screen you have it on.
Yeah.
I had to ask a complicated question.
Yeah. So, any other questions for Captain Carl?
65.1.
Okay. Wow, that's warm.
Yeah, warmer than what I thought it was going to be.
I was figuring 58, something like that, but 65 is warm for that river.
Yeah, 65.1,
and
it just went to
64.9.
Nice.
Yeah. I believe that's your chilly personality, Carl. Back away from it. It'll lighten back up again.
Well, I got a thermal, I got a fleece jacket and another hoodie. I'm bundled up. I got two pairs of jeans on.
Jesus. Come on.
Yeah, everybody on the boat's losing clothes. They're looking at me and laughing at me.
Yeah, well, Carl, we already know that. So, anyway, I appreciate the report, and we will catch back up with you on another show. Just kind of wondering, I knew you were out there working the Peace River. I was kind of curious to find out, because when we leave the station, I'm going to try and take a little bit of time to take my boat out. Think I'll get it off the ramp?
Yeah, by the time you get done, yes.
Okay. All right, Carl. Well, thank you very much. And it's Captain Carl. What's your phone number, Carl, if somebody wants to get a hold of you?
941-565-7325.
Very good, guys. And that's Captain Carl. Now, Carl does two types of trips. You can hire him to go out in his boat, and he'll take you out, catch fish. Or you can hire him to come on your boat, which is about half the price of a regular charter. So you can actually do two of those for one. And if you're interested in learning where to go, what to do, it's nice to have a captain on your boat with you. You drive, they just tell you where to go and show you how to fish it. So, anyway, thanks, Carl. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
So, you know, a lot of people coming down, I don't think even realize that service is available.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't realize how available it is. You know, and... They come down, they're lost, they're confused, they're a little nervous about going out there, which is rightfully so. It's, you know, these people don't realize where they're from. It took them 20, 30, even 40 years to figure out where to fish. And then they come to this new body of water and think they're going to learn it overnight, and that's not going to happen. It's going to take a little bit of time, but we tell them about hiring charters, and a lot of them think, well, hiring a charter, okay, yeah, I can go fish, but they don't think about the hiring a charter captain to go on their own boat.
Most of them think, okay, I'm going to hire a captain, then I'm going to turn my GPS on in my pocket and steal all his spots.
Yeah.
That happens a lot too. Why they're trying to hire a captain. They figure, okay, I'm going to get on the boat. I can hide my GPS and my, you know, pack, and I'll just leave it on all day, and that way I can follow the track back and figure out where he's going and all this stuff. And wouldn't it just be better to hire somebody who's going to go on your boat and show you where to go and all that? You don't have to lie and sneak around with it. Yeah. I mean, and it's less money. So it makes more sense if you're a beginner out there. It's the bottom of the hour, and we're going to do the WKDW Radio 97.5 FM Real Community Radio. And we're broadcasting out of Northport, Florida. And you can go over... you can listen to us in Arcadia, Nocatee, Fort Ogden, Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte, you know, plenty of places. Not, you know, Venice, Englewood, not to forget anybody, and our friends out in the farming communities and ranchers and all those people. So, I mean, I think, just on a side note, I remember people always want to make fun of farmers. Make fun of them when you're sitting down to dinner.
Right.
Yeah, that's the best idea. When you're thinking about somebody who's raising animals and raising crops, next time you're sitting down at dinner, make jokes. Yeah, go ahead. Okay, so anyway, a lot of people coming in. I think we've had a tremendous amount of newbies in the store.
Yeah.
And there's just so many people coming in. They're asking a lot of questions. What would you say the top questions are right now?
One is tides. Has been a real confusing one to people. The circle hooks is another very confusing one for the general population out right there.
Well, as far as tides go, you know, they've got these tide clocks, and you can buy them and you can set them, and it's going to show you when it's high tide and low tide by the clock. You know, if you're on the east coast of Florida and you're listening to us over in Stuart, Fort Lauderdale, you know, Miami, great. Because we are broadcast live on the internet at KDWradio.com. RJ's looking at me going, you're an idiot. Come on.
I didn't say that. I thought it, but I didn't say it.
It was nice of you not to actually enunciate it.
Right.
But KDWradio.com. And so you can listen to us on the internet anytime. Check out fishandfranks.com while you're on the internet too. But over there, every 6 hours, the tide changes. It goes high tide, low tide, high tide, low tide. Here on the west coast of Florida, on the Gulf of Mexico side, you can have one tide change in 24 hours, or two, or three, or four, or five. None and six are possible. I haven't seen them yet, but one and five I've seen several times. And so to properly use a tide clock on the Gulf Coast, what you do is you hang it over the canal, kind of where you can see it, and you walk out, and if it's underwater, it's high tide. If it's out of the water, it's low tide. And that's how you make a tide clock work on the west coast of Florida.
Okay, and let me ask the dumb question of the day. My dumb question of the day is, how has this supermoon affected the tides? Have we noticed a big difference?
Yeah, the full moon, no matter what, is always going to make the tides a little higher or a little bit lower. And when you have the case of a super moon, its gravitational pull is going to make it even a little bit more significant. Maybe not drastic to your eyeballs, but it's good enough.
Well, when you see a super moon, they're talking about it 11 to 14% larger.
Yeah, just closer to the Earth is, I think, what they're
so
talking about.
So you're going to get, correspondingly, I would, and I have no way to know this, a frankism, probably not a truism, but even to double that would be a 25% increase in tide, you know. And so if it's going to go out, it might be, let's say it was going to take out a foot and a half of water, so you would add another 25% to that. So it's not big, big numbers like, you know, it's going to add an extra foot, because we only exchange about 2 feet of water here a day. So 25% of that's what, a half a foot?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, if it's a foot, a 1.5 foot tide change, you're only seeing a few inches difference. So casual observation, you wouldn't notice it. If you were stuck on a sandbar, you'd notice it big time. But for just a casual observation, you wouldn't see
much. That's usually how I can tell it's low tide, is the boat stuck on a sandbar. So
yeah. Well, yesterday, one of the captains called and wanted to know if I had a boat in the water that he could borrow because he was going to do a charter up on the river, but he couldn't find a ramp where he could get his boat off. The tide was so low, and at Lashley, the end of the concrete was actually out of the water where the ramp was. So I said, sure, I've got a boat in the water, but unfortunately the one pontoon stuck on the mud and the boat's tilted way over. I said, if you bring a shovel, you could probably get to it in a while. But no, I didn't have any good news for him right there.
Another thing that full moon does that makes it a little bit more of a significant tide for us, if you watch the weather patterns, usually we get a pretty good cold front a couple of days before or after the full moon here in Florida. And so most of those cold fronts are out of the north or the northeast, which the way Charlotte Harbor is shaped, it blows water out of the harbor. So you add that wind and the stronger already tide, now you lose even more water.
You can lose 50% of an additional 50% of whatever the tide change would be, easy. 6 inches of wind out of the northeast blowing all day will take 10 miles an hour wind out of the northeast all day will take out 6 inches of water very easily. Getting into top five this week. Let's see. We got five fish. What would the five fish be, Robert?
Triple tail has been number one. All right, you can now, get out there with the weather.
Are any triple tail up in the harbor?
None that I've heard of. A couple guys have been looking, but nothing.
So basically, this is getting into the Gulf of Mexico. You got tomorrow, which is going to be awesome. The brighter, the sunnier day is going to be your best time for triple tail. They love putting their nose up under the shade, getting those eyes in the shade. And whatever floating debris in the Gulf of Mexico close to shore, you're going to find triple tail. What did Carl say? He caught like
16
yesterday. So lots of triple tail out there along the Gulf. Free line of shrimp and get it right next to the buoy. Just keep in mind, you're not looking for a triple tail. You're getting your boat up on plane and then backing the throttle down to go as slow as possible while being up on plane. Keep the sun at your back so you go across the crab trap buoys with the sun at your back. You can't see into the reflection of the sun. Good polarized glasses. Watch along the crab trap buoys. When you see something that looks like a dirty old oil rag, and that's what it's going to look like, guys, maybe, you know, it just, the imaging in the water, it doesn't look like a fish there. It looks like an old oil rag.
Yeah.
So you're going to see the fish, you're going to go up into the wind, you're going to come back and drift back across casting a bait or bring your trolling motor up and cast on the baits. Small shrimp, you don't want big stuff for this. This is all about smaller baits, small greenback, small shrimp, small hooks, light leader, 20, 25-pound test leader, and you know, good luck. There's some hefty ones out there, 28 inches or better. Your average ones are going to be in that 10 to 15 inch range, but there's some monsters out there. And what's really weird is we've been hearing that you get one triple tail off, and usually I just abandon it, but I'll throw down, hook up, and there has been several on a single buoy. Let the next bait drift down further and get it down towards the bottom. And there's been more triple tail hanging out along the rope. When that first one's up there, the other ones have been below them. And it's not something I've really seen much of until this year. We have multiple triple tail on the same buoy. So keep that in mind. One person cast. Let it drift down. When they hook up or before, you know, as their bait is drifting down, another person cast in. So their bait starts falling just behind the other one. So one's just above the other and you want them tangled up. So make sure, you know, you have the same type of baits in there so you have the same rate of fall. But multiple fish on a single buoy, kind of a triple tail revelation for this year.
Yeah, it's been pretty impressive.
Number two on the list would be Sheephead. Where's some good places, Robert?
Most of the Sheephead have been doing really good along the intercoastal as far as numbers and quality. You know, from Pine Island Sound to the backside of Boca Grande through the typical Placida fishing piers and bridges right there all the way up into Lemon Bay.
All right.
And then hearing mixed reports of them moving onto the onto the little bit of oyster flats that are up there inside Whidden Creek area, Turtle and Bull Bay, all around those shacks.
Yeah, and I've actually heard them over as far as Ice House 2, right across from the Indian Fields, north of Matt Lachey, back a little bit on the east sides, and more so up in the Myakka Cutoff and Tippy Canoe, where you find any kind of deeper holes with some crustacean bottom, oyster pebble, something besides mucky bottom and a deeper hole, and you've got nice sheephead there. Placida Pier, walking out in there, good bet, bad bet?
Medium bet. I've had some pretty good reports, but the wind's been blowing pretty good, so some of those guys haven't been staying very long because it's been a little brisk.
All right, Eljabeen?
Eljabeen's been starting to pick up. Getting some better feedback on that this week.
Tom Adams?
Haven't heard much, but the one guy last week said him and his buddies had been fishing the actual Tom Adams Bridge from their boats and fishing all the pilings and the bumpers in between and the center span. And been doing real good on some nice ones there.
So they're in with the state conspiracy about scraping the pilings, letting the barnacles fall in there.
Probably.
The state has come up with a new plan to keep the pilings clean, maintenance-free, without any expense. They've let the sheephead fishermen know if you chop up some of the barnacles on the pilings with a scraper blade, it makes great chum for the sheephead, so those pilings stay nice and clean right now. You're going to be really hard pushed to find barnacles on any of the seawalls or pilings around some of these bridges. If you get there and nobody's doing it yet, have a metal edge scraper. It's about a 4 to 6 inch blade on a wooden handle usually, and just kind of do a little bit of scraping. Remember, not a lot, because if you do it all at once, you did it all at once. So a little bit here, a little bit there really works and helps keep the pilings nice and clean and catch a lot of fish doing that.
The biggest thing, though, is if you are doing it on one of the wood piers, like the Anger Pier or the Placida Pier, you're only lightly scraping them off. You don't need to get in there and take a, you know, like you're a beaver and destroy those wooden
pilings. You don't want to be chopping down the pier you're standing on, is what he's saying. Keep in mind, those things are sharp. And the more you dig into the wood, the more tax dollars it costs to fix it. And guess whose tax dollars those are? Yours and mine. So let's be a little smart about this. All right, getting into the jacks. Any jacks up in the ICW?
I haven't heard much of them. The couple that I've heard about have been really small guys, like half a pound to a pound.
Yeah, some smaller jacks. But now the bigger jacks, you get back into the canal systems. Englewood canals, anything you're hearing about?
No. Not too much, just same thing, littler guys.
South Gulf Cove, anything?
No.
PGI?
PGI, definitely.
I'm hearing about great numbers of jacks down in the Cape Coral canals.
I forgot about.
Yeah, what about Port Charlotte canals?
Not as much. They've been coming through every now and then, but not as consistently as I would imagine because of PGI having good numbers. They're usually on our side, too.
Yeah, and I would have to assume that Venice should have them, but I haven't heard anything about jacks up in the Venice canals.
No. Not at all.
So maybe they're just there and I'm not hearing about them. That's always a big possibility, boys and girls. All right. Trout. Spotted sea trout.
They're doing good. I mean, like you were saying earlier, at the mouths of the canals and the PGI and Port Charlotte side.
Mostly smaller ones from what I'm hearing. The guys coming in today and all that, mostly smaller trout at the mouths. I think if you're looking for the bigger trout, you're going to have to get back into some of those back canals and really, you know, go back up there, find a little wider area. I think they went back for that deeper water in some of those holes in PGI, back up Burnt Store Isles, Cape Coral canals. If you push up farther into the canals, I think you're going to find bigger fish. But I know that's happening up in Port Charlotte because back up in the O'Hara, East Spring Lake, that first deep hole before the bridge, I'm hearing stories about some bigger trout there. I haven't heard anything on the Sunrise, and the Sunrise usually has nice trout in it.
Right, and I usually pick up one or two here when I'm fishing out back at nighttime. I very seldom catch them during the day, but I'll occasionally catch one or two behind my house at night, and I haven't stuck any lately at all. But the Lemon Bay still doing real good on some bigger trout on both sides, both the Manasota Key Island side and the mainland side. And up there by that Lemon Bay Conservancy and just north of there doing real good on them.
And something to try is that Strike King Crawdad. You know, if people are using it now, it's new, it's fresh, it's different. The fish haven't heard it. They don't know anything about it. You're probably going to do really well with it. In a few months, most of these new flash lures that, oh my God, they're catching everything with it, they kind of fade out. So you got a good opportunity right now to get in with those crawdad baits and use them on the trout before any of the fish kind of, okay, I've seen that before thing go on.
Right.
And you wouldn't think something that's just barely smarting a rock that would work or that would happen with. And some lures that they don't really, they just work and work and work and they keep working.
Yeah.
But other ones, you get kind of a little time slot to go out and just blast them. RJ, I should have asked you before, have you ever been sail fishing?
I have.
You have?
I have. Where? And I did kite fishing. I forget we went out of Fort Lauderdale, I believe.
And
I'm going to be bad. I couldn't remember the guy's name, but his name is on the fishing kite.
Yeah.
He was the guy, the captain that created these fishing kite things. And the same experience as Robert is I spent most of the trip in the fetal position. They'd get a sailfish on and they'd stand me up and stick the rod in my hand. You know, I'd reel like crazy to get him in and then lay back down again on the deck. So I'm like you, Frank. Equilibrium.
Well, with all my other health issues, that's one of them, inner ear problems. One of the things I will tell you, and Sudafed is a phenomenal tool to have with you. Real, original, non-drowsy. You got to go to a pharmacy and ask for it.
Mm.
Or one of those. Most of the ones you can buy off the shelf aren't strong enough to help you. But when you're out there, most of the reason you're seasick is your ears won't balance out. One side's the fluid in your inner ear is moving faster than the other side. Divers, while they say don't use Sudafed, all the divers do. But get the real stuff. I mean, I don't know whatever brand you like, but the non-drowsy stuff, it is. You cannot take a, Dramamine?
Dramamine.
Okay, will not work once you're on the water. Nope. It's a sedative. It just makes you sleepy. It's supposed to calm you down. And Dramamine only works if you start taking it the night before, then take it again that morning, but you're drowsy all day. But if you get out there and you get into a situation where you're starting to get seasick, pop a Sudafed before you get sick, because it's got to stay in your stomach. Mm. You don't want to put it down and have it come right back out. So if you think it's going to be a day where you might, pop that Sudafed and you'll be shocked at how much better you feel. It clears out your sinuses and your inner ears, makes everything work better.
Right, and I'll add to that, having been a cave diver for many, many years, you get down in the dark at around 60, 70, 80 feet, and you do start to lose equilibrium completely. You start to get sick. You know, your stomach starts to bother you a little bit because you don't know which way is up or which way is down. And if you're not taking Sudafed, that is one hell of a negative experience to be down about 100 feet in a crawl space and suddenly feel sick.
You got way more cojones than I have. I have faced down many things in my life and been a hero and a coward and a good guy and a villain and all that. But to go down in a cave, scuba diving, nope. Not me. To be in a crawl space.
Well, that's why I'm so skinny, because I can survive getting in and out of the crawl spaces. So.
I'm like, wow. You know,
you puzzled me one more time with your extensive life things that you've done.
Yeah, I'm like, wow.
Someday I'll bring in the pictures that we took at Cape York Peninsula in Australia. We dove the sites that were being sunk by the change in the Adelie River that had all the cave paintings in them. And we were down, in some cases, to get back up into the caves where these paintings were. We were down about 180 feet. And we had to go in with rebreathers because couldn't get a tank big enough with you to get in there. So you're with a rebreather to get in and get back out again. But that's one great experience to be able to come up in complete darkness, turn on your headlamp, and you're in a cathedral with paintings on all the walls and things like that.
So, that's amazing. And they were, putting up a dam and flooding the river out?
Yeah, they put up a dam and they flooded this entire area that had been supposedly the unbroken history of man coming to Australia. It even recorded when the dingo made it to Australia, and they were able to tell by what these silica flows that were on the cave how thick they were, and they knew how long it took to get that much of a flow on it. So it's a pretty interesting thing.
So Australia's just as dumb. Their government's just as stupid as ours.
Just as dumb, if not dumber, than ours. Yeah.
I mean, sorry
to my Australian friends, but you know.
Well, nothing to do with the Australian people. I know. Actually, quite a few people from Australia. I've worked around the world, and I've worked with a lot of Australians, and they're awesome people. But to think that their government is dumb enough to bury something like that underwater, you know, there had to be another place.
Well, and I would think, too, it's a lack of cultural sensitivity. And you know, we see the same thing here in Florida. You know, there's middens and things like that and burial mounds and stuff that the developers are just bulldozing off. Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
So
I mean, between our government and their government, people always say, oh, well, look at that. Look at this country. And I'm like, yeah, well, look at it close.
Yeah, yeah.
They just – governments are governments. I don't know why you can elect a good, smart, intelligent person and then I don't know who invented the magnet that they put outside of government offices, but it has the ability to take a human brain and lower it 2.5 feet. And when you go out, it reverses it. They come out of that door, and they're just like a real person again.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, getting back into this crappie fishing, bass fishing, taking on a really strong thing right now, right, Robert?
Yeah, real strong for probably the last, 4 weeks, really, but the bass seem to be getting a little bit better with the crappie getting a little bit better. I mean, I just don't know how much better it really can get, to be honest. The bass fishing did slow down a little bit this week and turned into more of a late afternoon evening bite because that water temperature did drop with that front coming through. So guys have been coming in like midday and buying their shiners to fish the last half of the day. But the crappie fishermen, they've been coming in at 6 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night all times of the day and doing very, very well.
Yeah, good hint for a lot of you crappie guys is minnows under a bobber, but when you're on the canals, we're finding pepper trees are great habitat for crappie. They seem to like hanging out because those pepper trees have all those roots and shoots that go down in the water and create a tangled up mess. I think it protects them from predators because they like being on some type of structure, and there's really nothing in the bottom of these canals besides muck. So if you can find a deeper shoreline with some larger pepper trees where they have a lot of roots and branches going into the water, great place to look for crappie.
Absolutely.
And if you've got a boat and you're going up and down looking for them, a good trick is, while it's still a little warmer out, hollow yourself out. If you got one of those great big trees, take some, clippers or cutters or whatever and hollow out a hole in that so you can cast back into there once the crappies start bunching up on that tree. I know it's a lot of work for a possible, but if it looks like it's good habitat or you caught some there this year, next year go there before the spawn and, you know, cut a little cave into it so you got a clear cast back into that tree. It really helps.
Absolutely.
Because we do the same thing on the lily pads and the thick mats. We'll go in there and just take a rake and clear out an area so you can drop a bait down into there. And that clearing and that bait appearing in it is excellent way to get these fish to hit. We do it on bass, do it on bluegills, shellcrackers, all these different fish, and it works even with the crappie. So I'm going to say Northport up around Price, along the canals on Price, Hillsborough Road going south towards Port Charlotte. You got to look. This is not like, okay, you're going to see this pretty opening and here's this wonderful place to fish. It's literally noticing where somebody's kind of tramped down the grass to get up on some of these vacant lots where you can get up and get on the fish the canals. That's your best thing. Going slow, you know, pull over, let traffic go by, but watch along the grass and watch the top. You'll see where people make paths to go in and out to fish. And right now it's a great time to be out there. Minimal bugs, minimal anything, but if it's cold in the morning and sunny in the afternoon, you stay on the shady side of stuff, right?
Correct.
Because Sunnyside could have critters on it. They're going to get warm in the sun. So just watch what you do and wear shoes or boots. No flip-flops going back through trails. That's not good because you can step on fire ant hills and all this other stuff. Shoes are preferably boots to go back and do those crappie fishing adventures. We're going to be getting in, we've got a topic show coming up, monofilament versus braid. What's going to happen? A lot of things. They thought braid was just going to end monofilament, the way monofilament kind of ended catgut and nylon. But it's mono starting to make a comeback, and we're going to go into more about that. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up, just letting you know we're doing the investigation on that. One big question is, any idea what happened to the big shrimp this year? We should have massive shrimp in massive numbers, and this should be the time of year with big shrimp. We're seeing all little ones.
I don't know what's going on. I mean, I'm hearing about it from north of Tampa all the way down to even Miami. And Miami usually stays consistently big all year long.
No, that's not true.
Well, bigger than what we get on this side.
A little bit larger, yeah.
You know,
but and I'm not hearing about big shrimp anywhere.
No, not
anywhere. So if you're going in the bait shop, ours or somebody else's, a lot of bait shops around, you know, and support your local bait and tackle stores, it's not their fault. I mean, we're literally talking to shrimpers all the way around the state, and the commercial guys are landing big shrimp, but bait shrimp cannot be brought up from more than 10 feet of water. You might get 15, and then you get a big die-off, but 20 feet of water, and those shrimp are all dead when they come up. Shrimp don't...
they get the bends.
Yeah, they get the bends when you bring them up. And so the bait shrimping has to be done best in 6 feet of water or less, 10 feet of water or less. And so as soon as you start breaking that 10-foot mark, you start losing all the bait, and the whole idea is keep them alive. I think that's why we're seeing a lot of big shrimp out in the middle of the harbor in that 18, 20-foot. We're hearing about them out in the Gulf, hearing about lots of big shrimp caught commercially. But the bait shrimp, maybe it got too cold and they just moved off the flats.
You know, the other thing that kind of makes a little sense I didn't think about, but was the harbor draining, taking a lot of silt and sediment away. Maybe it just changed some of the contours of the bottom where those shrimp were able to bury and hide up.
Yeah, they might just be moving to different areas, but...
But I'm hearing about it so much in the state, so that kind of kills it a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think that's it. I think it might simply be a matter that it got really darn cold, and those shrimp move to deeper water for the warmth.
Yeah, that's possible.
And you cannot get bait shrimp out of deep water. They just die. And, you know, dead bait is not what they're after.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of weird questions this year. Not a lot of good solid answers. A lot of good guesses. Why is there so many triple tail on a single buoy this year where that's not the normal pattern? Sheephead actually as good in numbers on some of the flats and the reefs as there are around some of the piers and trestles. I would say Mary's, Power Pole, Novak, Tremblay, M13, M16, they've got as good a sheephead populations as what we would normally see in the bridges, the piers, right. Stuff where historically they're just in big numbers.
Right.
And
yeah, that's true.
So, and where did the bigger trout go? Bull Bay is the best place on the water, drifting the middle of Bull Bay for bigger trout. Turtle Bay's got more numbers. Pine Island Sound picking up a little bit. East side, west side of the harbor, doing fair on the trout. East side just starting to pick up, mostly on the outside of the bar, though. I'd say, what, 5-6 feet of water, Robert?
Yeah, 5 to 6 feet would be my optimal choice.
All right. You know, if you have any questions you want us to talk about, answers, wondering, you know,
anything
about anything,
fishing.
You know, frank@fishandfranks.com, no G in Southern Fishing, boys and girls, frank@fishandfranks. Email me with any questions you want or any topics you'd like us to talk about. The Fishing Club is coming to Northport this month, February 27th. Call Fish and Franks, 941-625-3888, 941-625-3888. Reserve your seats. We got the Fishing Club coming up to Northport Tuesday, February 27th. We still have our meetings at Luigi's in this month, Normally it's Tuesday and Wednesday, but this Wednesday would be the Valentine's Day, so we're going to be doing Tuesday, and then the following Tuesday, the 20th, and then the 27th up here in Northport.
And but the Luigi's ones are already full.
The Luigi ones are full up, so if you want seats for the Northport one, call. We're about half full now, so call and get there. It's right here at the WKDW studios. And so at Common Grounds, that's the name of the place, right next door, Common Grounds, at the WKDW Radio 97.5 FM Real Community Radio. Go on kdwradio.com, click the Donate Now button. Just think, you got to listen to Robert. He's got to be worth 50 cents or a buck. I know you're going to like take away money because you had to listen to me, but at least for Robert's sake, go and donate a couple bucks, keep him going. All the money goes to the radio station. We don't take any or want any. We just enjoy being part of the family. How are we doing on time?
I think we're done.
Okay.
And we don't have the music still, so you'll have to sing us out, Frank.
Boom, buddy, da, boom, buddy, da, boom, buddy, da, boom. Happy trails. I don't know what to do here.